It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, drive home edition of the Rico. As the New York Mets score an absurd amount of runs, they bail out Clay Holmes, they bail out the manager. Pete Alonso has a party. It really was a party for Pete Alonso. And the Mets, more important than anything, win a game they really, really needed to win. I understand that Pete breaking the record is very cool. He actually tacked on with a second. It was a fun night at Citi Field. They hit a ton of home runs. They ran out of fireworks, no joke. But the most important thing is that this freaking team won a game. And winning streaks have to start somewhere. So I am not going to be delusional and tell you this is the beginning of an 8-game winning streak, though I hope it is. I'm not going to tell you that all the issues that we have witnessed over the last 2 months have been solved, but it's nice to win a game. It's nice to beat up Spencer Strider with those really thick calves. I mean, he has some of the biggest legs you'll ever see. I did not watch the game on TV. I was at the game, obviously, so I didn't get to hear Keith Hernandez if he was even doing the game, but Keith is very obsessed with the thick calves of Spencer Strider. And then Gary Cohn always says, well, Jonathan Broxton had bigger. Look, bottom line is he's got thick freaking legs, and the Mets pounded him. And that was the most important thing. The most important thing is that this offense not only scored early against Spencer Strider, they scored often. And then they tacked it on Austin Cox. The one guy they couldn't hit was the position player Luke Williams. But we have to start with the offense, not just Pete Alonso, everyone else, Brandon Nimmo with an incredibly clutch 3-run home run after they blew the lead. This offense needed it, and this offense is capable of days like this where just about everybody hits. Francisco Alvarez, we certainly can't forget him, going opposite field and then pulling one over the Great Wall of Flushing. Also smoked a double the other way. I mean, a great offensive day for Alvarez. You get Beatty tacking on a home run. He almost missed another. I mean, the crazy thing about the Met offense is they ended up hitting 6 home runs. There were a few others that just missed. And the ball was traveling very well. But Brett Beatty hit one to the warning track that just missed. Alonso on the double was very close, even on the fly out to right field. Like, Pete had 2 more he almost hit. So you tack that on with Beatty. I mean, that's almost the 10 home runs in this game. And they were not being fooled by Spencer Strider and Austin Smallcox. Just a great team effort, great offensive effort. There were some little things that was cool, too. Lindor with the bunt hit with 2 outs and nobody on. And that's the other thing. They scored a majority of their runs, and I don't have my book in front of me, but they scored at one point, I think when they were at 9 runs, they had scored 8 of 9 runs with 2 outs. So you saw clutch hitting. You saw home runs with guys on base. I mean, listen, it was great offensively. Now, they got to keep this up. They're going to have a chance to beat up Carlos Carrasco in game 2 of this series. So, you know, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but this is great. Now go do it again. Because this offense is due. This offense is due to explode a few more times. So that was great. And obviously the Alonso moment, you know, Pete hitting a home run and what was, look, it's not the big spot at the bottom of the 9th inning or the bottom of the 7th inning, but it was still a pretty cool spot because it was important. You know, you're looking at this lead at the time, it's 3-1, and no lead is safe with this team. As we saw in this game, and obviously we saw in the Brewer game with Shaw Manaea. So it was, because I was talking about this on Evan and Tiki, that not all home runs are created equal. Like, you'd like to see Pete do it in a relatively big moment. And honestly, 3-1 game, making it 5-1. We all know how this game turned out. It was tight. They blew the lead, which I'll get to in a few minutes. It was cool. It was important. Felt important at the time, which is, I think, essential. You know, it wasn't a 10-1 game. It wasn't even the second home run he hit. By the way, I got to stop. I got to stop for 1 second. I am driving, and I am staring at the biggest freaking moon I have ever seen. Like, I wish I could. It's not safe, so I won't. I wish I could turn my phone around to show you the absolute size of this moon. Holy mackerel. Like, it is, I mean, I've seen the moon many times in my life. Obviously, we all have. I mean, that's what happens when it's nighttime. This thing is monstrous. I have not been following the news closely So maybe there are people out there saying, ah, come on, you should have known it's the Bloody Moon or the Bloodshot Moon or the Giant Moon. Maybe there's a nickname for this. But, Hoff, I'm telling you, I'm looking at, like, the biggest moon I've ever seen. And I don't mean, like, Sean Morash's ass. I mean, like, a giant moon. But whatever, I digress. So the offensive explosion was awesome. The Pete moment was very cool. And I'll tell you an underrated thing about the Pete moment. So he hits the two-run home run. Very cool to see. Opposite field, which you love. But I love the fact that that douche, Spencer Strider, had to stand on the mound and wait. Like, Spencer Strider doesn't like the Mets. I don't think any Brave likes the Mets except for Nacho Alvarez. He's probably a big Mets fan. But Spencer Strider doesn't like the Mets. Remember that first start where the Mets had success against him? He made a comment, well, they didn't hit the ball that hard. So he now gives up a home run. It's a 5-1 game, so he's getting his ass handed to him. And he's got to stand there while the entire Met dugout comes out to celebrate Pete Alonso. And he started to throw a warm-up pitch. Like, maybe this is my own projection on him, but he looked agitated. He looked like he wasn't happy about the whole situation. So the fact that Pete hit the home run, got to celebrate at home, the whole dugout came out to celebrate him, and Spencer Strider had to stand there like a horse's patoot, I thought that was very, very cool. Now, let's get to the negative, because there was some negative in this game. Clay Holmes crapped the bed. Look, I said this about Clay Holmes on a few Rico. I said it on the air on Evan and Tiki on the Fan. We have to accept that he's a 5-inning pitcher. So when he was pulled in his last start after 75 pitches, I was not against that. I think that you've got to follow what his season has looked like. And we have to accept that while we'd love for starters to go 6 or 7 innings, getting 5 out of Clay, 5 innings, 2 runs, you sign it, you hope you score enough runs, and you can find a way to get 12 outs from your bullpen. This was not that. Because after he short-circuited the first inning damage, because that could have been far worse, he walks the leadoff hitter, he goes 3-2 to Matt Olson, who rips the double, second and third, nobody out. Look, I was actually sort of happy that he got out of it at 1-0. Like, it obviously could have been worse, especially when the next hitter hit the ground ball to second base that drove the run in and advanced the runner to third. I thought that Clay's first inning was okay. Made it so that it wasn't what could have been a disaster. And he's fine in the second. He gets help out on the funky double play in the third inning, which had a good time scoring, where Lindor gets the lead runner and then throws out the back runner on the 6-5-4-5 double play if you're scoring at home. So he's through three, and he's got a 5-1 lead. And I'm thinking, all right, Clay, get through the next 2 innings, give up a run, fine. 5 innings, 2 runs, leave with a 5-2 lead. Maybe the Mets offense will score more, and I would say good effort. And what happened in the fourth inning is inexcusable. It's just on every level. I mean, between throwing a hanging slider to Nacho Alvarez on 0-2 when he's ahead of the count, to walking guys, which he did in that inning. He ended up walking 5 guys in this game. That can't happen. That cannot happen. The answer is, that can't happen. I've already accepted you're going to be a 5-inning guy. You cannot completely blow a 5-1 lead in the fourth inning with a lot of the damage coming from the bottom of the order. It can't happen. And what made matters worse was the manager. Now, this will be forgotten. That's why I waited. You know, how many minutes have we been doing this now? 9 minutes here on the Rico. I waited 9 minutes because I want to start with the good, the offense, Alonso. Amazing. I'm happy they won. Trust me, I'm in a great mood. But Carlos Mendoza, when Clay Holmes is absolutely crapping the bed, allowing him to face Matt Olson, where Olson had a chance to tie the game or give them the lead, spoiler alert, he tied the game, you've got Gregory Soto warming up in the bullpen. Now, you also have Holmes' pitch count in the 80s, so I want to walk you through this. The idea of Clay Holmes going 5 innings, which is nice, we'd all like that, it's gone. It's gone. It's over. He's in the 80s. He's facing the leadoff hitter who he got out. He got, I'm trying to remember who the freaking leadoff hitter was right now because, again, I'm naked without my scorebook. I forgot who it was. Bottom line, it's Jurickson Profar. Jurickson Profar, there you go. Who we walked twice in this game. Like, Jurickson Profar, you know, is having the star, superstar season he had last year. Guy got missed, banged for a PED suspension. So he gets Profar out, but Olsen comes up in this big spot. First and third, two outs, okay? Tying run is on third, lead run is on first base. You already know Holmes ain't getting to the fifth inning. So if you are the manager, Carlos Mendoza, and you have a lefty warming up and Matt Olson is up, why are you not going to the lefty? Did not make sense. Why is Holmes remaining in the game to face a guy who smoked a double against him three innings earlier? And again, I go back to the original point. Holmes is done. Like, this game isn't going much further for him. You have Soto warming up and you have Olson up. And you may have seen this. I don't know if the broadcast mentioned it, but I certainly tweeted it out. Matt Olson, in his career, against Gregory Soto, the man warming up in the bullpen who would eventually come in, Matt Olson was 1-for-11. There is no explanation for why Clay Holmes was allowed to face Matt Olson. Zero. It made no sense. You have the career numbers, which I didn't even realize till I looked it up. I looked it up right away. In fairness, I looked it up after the pitching change because I was just curious. Because in my brain, I'm thinking, well, it's a lefty, so the lefty-lefty matchup makes sense anyway. Even if Holmes gets Olson out, he's done. You're not bringing him out for the fifth inning. At least I wouldn't. So when you talk about, well, I got to push the starter, I got to get as many outs as I can, what's the difference here? Play the matchup game. I don't know how Mendy didn't do that. That is a rough one. And the good thing for Carlos is that because the Mets ended up winning this game going away, it's forgotten about. Well, one thing, maybe it's a bad thing about the Rico, maybe it's a good thing, it's up to you. I don't forget anything, good and bad. So even in a win in which, yes, I'm happy, very happy they won this game, I still think back to that and I scratch my head and said, that doesn't make any sense. And it does bring up, do the Mets have a Clay Holmes problem? I can accept five innings. I cannot accept 3 2/3, five runs. I mean, that was a disaster. And luckily, it was saved by two things. It was saved by the offense scoring a million runs, specifically Brandon Nimmo. Credit the Nims. He has been in a major slump lately, had a big game today. Not all hits are created equal. The three-run home run that he hit after the Braves had come back to tie the game, I would tell you right now, is the biggest hit of the game. They had a lot of hits. The Alonso stuff was fun. Brandon Nimmo's three-run home run after Lindor laid down the bunt and Soto drew the walk, very big moment in this game because we are all tense after the Mets blow a 5-1 lead in 30 seconds. We are all nervous, especially after what happened the day before in Milwaukee. And the fact that this offense, as I pointed out, tends to score runs early and then goes away. They obviously were able to break out of that today by continuing to pile on and pile on and pile on. So major props to Nimmo because that was a very important three-run home run that gave them the cushion. So they were bailed out because a bad start, a start like that, can cause a lot of damage. It can cause damage on bullpen usage. Mets have overworked their bullpen a lot. You're already asking now for, I mean, do the math. You get 3 2/3 innings, you're asking for 13 outs from your bullpen. That's a lot. That's a crap ton. So you're asking a lot from your bullpen, and you're putting the game in danger. The offense, step one to solving the Clay Holmes problem, and number two, give credit to Justin Hagenman. Because when Hagenman was warming up in an 8-5 game, I said to my buddy with me, Dennis, I said, I don't know how comfortable I feel about Hagenman here in a three-run game. But the Mets very quickly tacked on a couple of runs to make it 10-5. And at 10-5, I'm like, all right. And my buddy says to me, it's a great question, at 10-5 in the sixth, would you sign for Hagenman getting out of the inning, allowing a run, 10-6 going into the seventh? I'm like, yeah, I'd sign for that. Now, the negative is he gives up a run, he gives up another run. You're going to have to use your high-end relievers. This is the first of a stretch in which they're playing six straight days. God knows what kind of length they're going to get out of their starting pitching moving forward. But as my buddy pointed out, we just need a win. And I said, you're right. Even if they have to use high leverage relievers, it would just suck to use high leverage relievers in a game in which maybe you can steal not having to do so. And so the combination of the offense blowing up and scoring a lot of runs and Hagenman doing a really good job to get the save, the Fugazi save, but in a lot of ways it is a save because it did save the Met bullpen, really not only helped making this a stress-free win, but helps them in Game 2 and helps them in Game 3. Because outside of Gregory Soto, they didn't use anyone else in the bullpen. There was no rubber arm Tyler Rogers. There was no Helsley or Diaz or Garrett. So that was important. That was very important. That's why, even though Phil Mushnick will write his normal monthly article bitching and moaning about that being a save, and most of the time I get why Phil says that, and he's not wrong, but in this case, Phil, if you're listening, if you're a Rico listener, he deserves a save for this one, Phil, because he saved the bullpen. He not only saved the bullpen, how many times have we seen, whether it's Hagenman or Blackburn did it earlier this year, a guy come into a four-run game or a five-run game and just make it a game? So in this regard, for the Mets, for the 2025 New York Mets, this is a save because he saved the bullpen and he saved us some agita. But this was a fun night at Citi Field. They ended up having a big crowd. And, yeah, I think early on the crowd had that negativity. You know, the crowd was feeling the angst, especially when Clay Holmes blew the lead. He was booed off the mound, which I understand. I did not join in. I'm not a booer, but I get it. But I think the offense was just able to relax everybody. And I can't say it enough. I'm going to repeat something I said earlier. The Lindor bunt, the Soto walk, and the Nimmo three-run home run was the most important sequence of this game, because immediately after blowing a big lead, and this is not what happened in Milwaukee, though I guess it sort of happened because they did tack on a run after the 5-1 game became very, or the 5-0 game became close and became 5-3. They did tack on a run to make it 6-3. But you blow a 5-1 lead, it's a 5-5 game, to instantly respond with three runs, incredibly important. The other thing was, I tweeted out this image, I don't know if anyone saw it, that the Mets put on the screen that they ran out of fireworks because they hit so many home runs. I've confirmed that that's true. That was not even the Mets scoreboard operators being sarcastic. True story. True story, Mike. They did run out of fireworks because the Mets hit six home runs. And baseball, God willing, they'll do the same thing on Wednesday in Game 2 of this series. One other thing before I ask Koff how he's feeling. How about the Braves going to a position player in Luke Williams? And then Luke Williams had already pitched four innings this season, and he comes in and was the best Brave pitcher. How about that? We're so used to these position players coming in and lobbing it in at 55 miles an hour and being ineffective. Luke Williams, a weapon for the Atlanta Braves, he was one of the best pitchers on the mound today. He was better than Holmes. He was better than that Spencer Strider. He was better than Austin Smallcox. Excellent job by Luke Williams. So kudos to him for saving the Brave bullpen. Now, off, how are we feeling tonight? Did you go to the Yankee game, or were you going to the Yankee game tomorrow? I forget which Yankee game you were going to.
I was thinking about going tomorrow, but I don't think I'm going to go. I really didn't. I really wasn't. I got an offer to go. Listen, I felt good about the game. I felt good about Pedalonto, but I'm so tired of Clay Holmes. I know it doesn't make a difference. They beat the piss out of the Braves. That's good. But I am really tired of Clay Holmes.
Well, let's address this, because before this game started, the Mets did make some news, and that was the fact that Frankie Montas is being pulled from the rotation, which is not a surprise. I think, as Hoff, you pointed out a lot last year, the Mets and David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza, they hold their guys accountable. And what I really appreciate about Stearns, because you can criticize a lot of the moves he made, it's totally fair game, and Frankie Montas being one of them, is that he's willing to admit a mistake. And we saw that last year with Joey Wendell and Adrian Houser specifically. Those are the two guys that he brought in. He made the trade, the Houser-Taylor trade. He signed Joey Wendell to a contract, and he very quickly was able to say, hey, I screwed up. And you're telling your owner that, the owner that, you know, writes the checks. Hey, yeah, sorry about that Joey Wendell thing. I'm going to DFA him. Sorry about that Houser trade. I'm going to move him to the bullpen. Frankie Montas is making a lot of money, and he has an opt-out for next season, which I don't know what he'll do, because it's funny, when you take a starting pitcher like Montas, who's accomplished, and you move him to the bullpen, and I'm sure he understands why, like he gets it, but he believes he's a starter. Frankie Montas could tell his agent at the end of the year, I'm opting out. I don't want to be. How are they going to use me next year? They're going to make me a long reliever? I mean, I like money, but I want to pitch. And that could be the genius of David Stearns, right? If Frankie Montas opts out. Now, the odds are he's not going to opt out. And his agent's going to say, look, opt in. The Mets will try to trade you. Maybe they'll give you a chance in the rotation. Maybe guys get hurt. You never know. You don't know what next year is going to look like. But Frankie Montas not only is being kind of benched this season in a way, who knows about next year? But I give Stearns a lot of credit for saying, hey, I screwed up. I'm taking him out of the rotation. And Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns have done that. They announced it. They didn't confirm who's going to pitch Saturday. I think it'll be Nolan McClain. Sean Manaea will pitch Friday on regular rest, which they can do with Sean. But to me, Nolan McClain makes the most sense. They kept his pitch count down in his last spring, his last AAA start. He only threw 75 pitches over four innings. He's mostly been touching the low 90s and the high 80s, so you could expect that at the major league level. And so it's not the easiest spot. Mariners are a good team. But this is the time. This is the moment. And I suggested them doing that last week, if you guys recall. So it's a week late. Maybe service time or rookie status has something to do with this. We talked about days on the roster, innings pitched, which can impact if you're eligible to be a rookie the following season. So maybe that had something to do with it. Or maybe it was, look, we're going to give Montas one more shot. We're going to use an opener. We're going to see if it works. It did not work. He pitched three innings. He threw a million pitches. Now, he wasn't helped out by Lindor's garbage error on Saturday, but he didn't pitch well. So I love that the Mets are doing this. It better be Nolan McClain or Brandon Sproat. I think it will be. It cannot be Brandon Waddell. It cannot be Justin Hagenman, who obviously is less likely to do it since he pitched today. It's got to be one of the kids. But here's the issue, Hoff, we're going to run into now. Because they've demoted Frankie Montas, and they're going to call up one of the kids, are they going to have the guts to do it to Clay Holmes too? Because we talked about this. What is Clay Holmes' bullpen role? Like, he was a very good late-inning reliever the last couple of years with the Yankees. Do they make him that? And do they have enough faith in both McClain and Sproat taking rotation spots? You also run into the numbers game issue. Like, I assume Hagenman's just going to go down, and the kid will come up with Montas moving into that long reliever role. If you're going to move Holmes to the bullpen, what roster spot is the next young pitcher taking? The other thing is they're going to go to a six-man rotation because they have a stretch of games where they play 16 times in a row. So I get the issue with Clay Holmes. I have it too. I'm just looking at the roster. I'm looking at 16 straight games. I think he's going to get a few more starts. I think if he continues to struggle, once they get through that stretch, then I think there's maybe an opportunity for Holmes to go to the bullpen.
It's weird because you think this would be like a good problem to have. Hey, you know, you have all these young arms you want to bring up, and what, like, they did the right thing by trading for those elite arms, Soto, Elsley, Rogers, but doing so, now you put yourself maybe it's gonna rock in a hard place because you don't know, like you said, Clay Holmes is what is. It's highly frustrating right now what David Stearns put us through right now.
Well, how about this? Can I offer how I would handle this and tell me if you guys would accept this for everyone who's already done with Clay Holmes, send him to the bullpen? Barring there's no injury to Clay and he's fine, he's feeling good, everything's fine, I think you have Nolan McClain make the start on Saturday. Okay, Clay Holmes is scheduled to pitch on Sunday. The wrapper-upper of this, I guess I would call it a home stand, but I know Sunday's game is the Little League game, so it's in Williamsport. But he is scheduled to make that start on Sunday, and I think he kind of has to. I would keep him in the rotation. He starts on Sunday against Seattle. Then the Mets begin that stretch where they play 16 straight days, where they're clearly going to add a sixth starter. Now, they've got options. Tyler McGill is about to make a rehab start. So he's on his way back. Paul Blackburn is basically rotting on rehab starts. And they also have Brandon Sproat. I don't think Jonah Tong's a kind of an option right now. you give McLean a shot. Let's see how he does. We'll see if McGill recovers from his injury. You're going to add a sixth starter, whether that's McGill, whether that's Sproat, whether that's Blackburn. Let's see after this stretch coming out of Labor Day where we are with Clay Holmes, with whoever gets that sixth spot, with McLean, and then I think it's a clear reevaluation. All right, what's Clay done? What has McLean done? What has whoever the sixth man is? And if I have to guess right now, I think the sixth man's probably going to be Tylor McGill if his rehab goes well. He did pitch well earlier this season. I would assume McGill gets that nod if he's ready. And then I think coming in September, where now you've got an extra roster spot, you got two, but really one in terms of adding pitching, I think that's your reevaluation period. And then for the final month, let's see where we're at. But I think just right now, as down as we are on Clay Holmes, I think he stays in the rotation. I think he kind of has to. He's going to have to make that start Sunday. And let's just see what he does coming out of the stretch of games where they play 16 in 16 days. Because they are going to have to add a sixth starter. They're not going to pitch Kodai Senga on regular rest. Not going to happen. Clearly, they're okay with Manai on regular rest. They're okay with Holmes on regular rest. They're okay with Peterson on regular rest, despite some of them struggling. So that would be my proposal. Now, if Clay Holmes on Sunday night in Williamsport gets absolutely shellacked by the Mariners, maybe we're talking about something different. Because, again, you do have options in terms of who should replace them. The options are, like I said, assuming McLean starts Saturday, Sproat, Blackburn, McGill. And then you move Holmes to the bullpen, and I guess your bullpen's deeper. And the guy that could be out of luck is Ryan Stanek. You know, we took that email the other day, DFA Ryan Stanek. Well, the numbers game may mean that he's gone. So that's where I stand with Holmes. I don't have a lot of confidence, but I think he should start Sunday against Seattle. And assuming it's not a disaster, continue on during that 16-game stretch. But most importantly, the team's got to hit. We've said it all year. And let us hope that this outburst, this explosion against Spencer Strider is a sign of things to come. It's Carrasco. It's Elder the next 2 days. Let's score a bunch of freaking runs. And let's get this thing straightened out. They put an extra game up on Philly to pull within five. The negative is there's still only two up on Cincinnati. But more importantly, win your freaking games. And Tuesday night against the Braves was at least a nice start. So hopefully everybody had a good time at Citi Field and you had a good time watching at home. We appreciate you downloading the Rico Bronya. Remember to subscribe to it. You never know when we're going to have a drive home or an instant reaction. And we always guarantee you Rico Bronya's after each series. So this series is going to recap on Thursday night. At some point, if you consume it live, it'll be very late Thursday night, maybe early Friday morning. And if you download it, it'll be in your inbox as long as you subscribe on Friday morning, recapping the Braves series. Thank you very much for listening to a happy, historic drive home edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.